Welcome to the 30th Monkey on My Boat podcast. I'm Gordon Brown. And when I'm not doing all about the politics, I like to listen to my favourite laid-back comics chat recorded on a Thursday night in a specific part of Southampton podcast. I also enjoy visiting the web blog mombcomics.com, where I find all sorts of comic book stuff, which makes the task of governing this country much less onerous. Discuss our back again spinning orders, look at some non-news and stuff, and then our spotlight is the much delayed review of Tintin in King Otakar's Scepter. Monkey on My Back podcast, we don't just read comics, we talk about them in a long-winded and smart-ass way too.
Not that smart-assed.
No. Around the table tonight are...
Hello, I'm Jane.
I'm speechless.
And I'm James, and thank you very much to Gordon Brown for taking time out from his busy campaign with the general election just ahead of us in the United Kingdom to record that very special message for us. I think that was really nice of him.
It was lovely, yeah.
It was, wasn't it? Was.
He's got a funny accent, isn't he? He's
Scottish and he can't help it.
Is he really Scottish?
Was that Scottish?
Yeah, he sounded Scottish to me.
No.
Yeah,
I wonder if it's obvious to the listener that at least three of us in this room had no idea what was about to happen.
I didn't either. He just came in, he recorded it, and then he left.
Oh, he's a good man.
And he is a good man, yeah. I mean, he really believes in beliefs. And I believe in beliefs too.
Apparently he prefers Friends to the West Wing.
Really?
And wants to watch The Hurt Locker more than he wants to watch In the Loop. So basically, he has no interest in politics at all.
Do you blame him though? I mean, it's very sterile and boring.
It is very sterile and boring, yeah.
Do you think he gets up in the morning, looks at himself in the mirror and just thinks, oh, fuck me, politics is boring.
To be honest... If I was a politician, I don't think I'd want to watch The West Wing either. They all seem to be very good at it.
And that's why you couldn't be a politician, Nick, because you said to be honest.
Oh. To be honest with you, James.
No, that's the catchphrase.
Oh. Somebody's using another of your catchphrases.
What's that?
I'm going to punch myself in the head.
No, I use that to say, like, when I'm really happy about something, I like this so much, I could punch myself in the head.
Oh!
I don't use it as a, like, oh, I'm so angry, I'm going to punch myself. It's like when I listen to Roigbiv by the Boards of Canada. It makes me so handy, I want to punch myself in the face.
Handy.
Yeah. You can hear that tune at the end of this podcast.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, we never normally know what you're going to play at the end.
No, but I'm giving it away this time.
Never heard that so, like, before.
I've been playing it a lot. Jane is fed up with it already.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Nothing.
Something disparaging.
No.
Didn't John...
space whale.
Didn't John send us a message from beyond the grave to suggest that he thought it would be a bad idea if we had Gordon Brown do the introduction?
He said that for some reason when recorded, Gordon Brown sounded vaguely racist and offensive.
I
just think that's a Scottish accent. What can he do?
I think... evidence has shown that John didn't know what he was talking about. I think it's all gone swimmingly so far.
Yeah, I think so too. I don't know, he's laughing.
You are a liar.
You're a great politician. So, everyone, what have we been doing with our weeks?
I haven't been sleeping as much as I should.
Oh dear, why have you not been sleeping, Nick?
Because my partner Amy is away and I don't sleep very well. When she's... No. No, I have not been masturbating the whole time, James.
Just most of
But I find that I generally settle into a 36-hour day when she's not around. 30-hour day when she's not around, which isn't very healthy.
Well, that fits into the 80 minutes and an hour thing, doesn't it?
Yes.
Which we established is the truth.
I think, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Also, my comic body clock has been a bit thrown out. Because I know that some of you bought your comics at the weekend last week.
On Friday, we took them to the pub where I attempted to read Jonathan Ross's Turf.
But I haven't got a clue. I haven't got a clue which of my comics were this week and which of them last week.
And we took them for a curry.
We did. I think it was a first for both of us, isn't it, that we took our comic books to a curry house.
Which one did you go to?
We went to the Jewel and the Crown that can be found in Southampton's delightful Shirley High Street.
Oh, I think I went there before Christmas. I think it's a very good place.
It's all right.
There used to be a very nice place called the Natrad, just behind Bedford Place, that was open until very, very late at night. I only ever went in there after the pubs had shut. And they always seemed very sprightly, like it was the middle of the day. It was very confusing.
Richard and I have eaten in there as well, I believe, haven't we? Long time ago, we were both quite pissed.
It's not there anymore, of course.
Probably.
Just take my word for it, yeah. You were wrecked.
Okay, so what else have you guys been doing?
Let's find out what Jane's been doing and get that out of the way.
Okay.
What have you been doing, Jane? Anything good?
I had to go and find Superman at the weekend.
Really? Was that successful?
It was successful.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to leave Superman at the weekend.
Where did you find him, if you don't mind me asking?
I found him under a rock.
Under a rock?
Yeah.
What was he doing under the rock?
Crying.
Really?
Yeah.
He knew you were coming then?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a restraining order and all sorts now, so yeah, wasn't that great.
So what? You found Superman and defended him to the extent that now you've got a restraining order against you from him as well?
Yeah, as well, yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you, James. You were going to say something.
I was just speculating about how Superman would handle having a stalker. He wouldn't vaporise them, would he? Because that's not part of his MO. I mean, they are essentially an innocent person that just
have a
disorder. He's not going to vaporise them, is he?
We don't know how he'd deal with something like that. It's out of
That's why we have to speculate about it on a comic book podcast.
We don't actually know what Superman's attitude towards mental health is. Has there ever been a comic where he has, like, got into a friendship with a mentally ill person or something?
Well, he's friends with Jimmy Olsen, isn't he?
Jimmy Olsen's ginger, he's not mental.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realise the two things were different.
They're very, very different, they're very separate things.
Oh, if I was make Superman, a note of that.
If I was Superman and I had a stalker, I'd at super speed so nobody could I would take them out of the atmosphere, throw them into the sun so that it was quick. You know, I wouldn't want them to suffer. And then I'd land back on Earth and act like nothing had ever happened.
So you're saying that Superman should have thrown me into the sun?
No. I mean the real Superman. Sorry, I said that out loud, didn't I? Gingers are not mental.
Yes. I've made a note for reference.
Amy Pond's ginger.
She definitely isn't mental.
Amy Pond. Ooh.
I love her and I love space whales.
Everyone loves space whales.
They're great, aren't they?
Space whale?
It's nice to know, though, when Britain is in its greatest crisis, when the children cry, the space whales will come.
Just one space whale.
The final space whale.
Yeah.
If you don't know what we're talking about, it was from Saturday night's episode of Doctor Who.
Spoilers.
It strikes me that a space whale wouldn't call itself a space whale. I think they could have come up with a better name.
Well, it's a
whale. Other than that, though, it was brilliant.
A whale in space. Whales.
Weren't the Smilers scary?
They didn't really explain those, though, did they?
I think they explained them as much as they needed to for me to be satisfied.
What would you call yourself if you were a space whale, then?
I'd call my... Well, probably an alien word. It'd sound... Because they... whales sound different. They talk differently than us, don't they? So you'd probably, in their own language... Did it sound like a normal whale? I can't remember.
It had a normal whale sound. But...
No, it'd call it
It's all the humans naming it. So he might have a really cool name, but they don't know.
And it's worrying that at the point in the future... Because we come up with quite good names for animals now... Mm-hmm. But it's worrying to me that basically in the future the human imagination will be so stunted that basically when they see an alien creature, they'll just call it a space version of the thing that it is most like from Earth.
It kind of looked like a whale.
How do you know he didn't just come with a name tag that said, I'm a space whale?
Well, it would have said, the name tag would have said something like...
Translated into space whale.
Maybe.
Actually, someone made a very good point on Twitter.
Well,
it happened. That it would have been much funnier if it had been James Whale being electrocuted in the head repeatedly. That would have been quite funny.
That's how you started your week, though.
It was James Whale. Did he... I thought he just became obscure, or was there
He was an obnoxious radio and TV host, wasn't he? Yeah.
I wasn't sure from the conversation if possibly he had done something bad and that was why he was no longer famous. Well, not that he was ever that famous.
I think his TV and radio shows were quite bad, that's enough.
That's Richard, a very good
what
point.
Have you done with your week, mate?
Had my sister move.
How did that go? Did that go well?
Oh, flat pack for about 5 hours.
You flat packed your sister?
Yeah, well, had move and then said, right, can you help with flat pack? You're any good? I went, yeah. Did the IKEA stuff. No worries. And said, do you fancy doing the bunk bed? Yeah, I was on a bit of a roll.
There's a bunk bed as well?
Yeah.
I don't live in this house.
Yeah. They got all the furnitures for the girls, so put all that together. Bunk bed, not from IKEA. Oh. Couldn't figure out what was wrong with it. Missing parts.
Do you want to name and shame?
They bought online somewhere. And played poker on Tuesday again.
Online somewhere.
No, paid at
the
mate's
house. No, I mean the furniture. Sorry, yeah, I was a little bit behind.
Yeah, played poker Tuesday and watched From Hell last night.
That's an unusual film, isn't it?
Yeah. John lent me the book ages ago and I've just had it sat on my shelf and I keep looking at it. And
okay, that's good.
So I thought I'll watch the film and then I'll read the book.
What did you think of Heather Graham's English accent?
I wasn't really paying much attention to her accent.
I know, no, okay. That would make sense.
And Stacey from Gavin and Stacey was in it as well.
Was she a prostitute as well?
She's the one at the beginning.
She's in the back as well.
Do you get to see her nudies?
Yeah, she's in the back as well.
Does she get to see her nudies in that?
You get to see her tits in the back, actually, yeah.
Is she the porn lady that has sex with Martin Freeman?
Yes,
oh, I liked her. I think I knew that, actually.
Yeah.
Love. Actually.
So now I need to...
Why are you shaking your head?
Because you said tits and it's rude.
That is a bit sexist, actually, Jane.
Yeah. I didn't say anything.
What?
No, I think
that's a bit sexist. Sorry, Richard, what were you saying?
Now I've seen the film, I am a little bit more inclined to read the book.
Which
is a bit of a weird way round of it.
That must be quite vindicating for the filmmakers.
Yeah. I didn't really think much of the film. So I'm hoping the book's good. I hear good things. Apparently Alan Moore's a bit of a good writer.
I've not read any of his stuff. I don't know if he's good or not. I've not really heard of him.
I saw an
the thing is, the
interview.
Comic's in black and white.
Oh.
Can colour it in?
No, that's no good.
It's not my copy.
Oh.
I lent you my crayons.
I was thinking of colouring all the blood bits in, just for John. And then I hand it back. I say, well, next time you read it, it's a bit going to be a bit more fun.
Yeah,
I've got a red pen and I've coloured all the blood in.
If you do that, will you let me know when you're going to give it back to him? Because I want to be there to see his reaction.
Yeah, I might do, actually.
I saw quite an interesting, quite a nice interview from a few years ago with Alan Moore and Stuart Lee. It was really nice.
Absolutely.
It's a very personal
Where he's talking about Glycon.
Yeah, I like his attitude.
I do too. It's sweetie. What language does Glycon mean sweetie in?
I think in space.
Aramaic or something.
Aramaic. But we were given that language by the space whales. Mm. So I don't know what
Save
you're
the space whales.
Save the space whales.
Space whale.
No, because we are now hundreds of years in the past from when there was only one space whale left. So there might be loads of them.
Yeah, probably
there
still
might not
loads.
Exist yet, though.
Jane really didn't parse the story as well as I did on it.
Oh, is that right?
The opening to next week's episode scared me too much.
Oh, the one coming up on Saturday looks like it's going to kick ass and take names, doesn't it?
No.
Oh, Second World War Daleks.
No.
Oh, how cool does that look?
It looks really
very
scary.
Easy answer to it.
It looks quite cool. Sorry, I was drinking tea.
You were.
I like Daleks.
What are you doing? What are you doing? What have you done?
Well, I thought you'd never ask.
I know what you've done. I know one of the things you've done. It's
Go on,
exciting.
In. What's that?
You've done your gardening.
I did do some gardening.
You've
really,
done it.
I had some really. I haven't done it all. I had some really sore arms on Monday.
You showed me the. I had some really sore arms. I had some really sore arms on Tuesday, but we don't need to go into that.
That massive pop comes courtesy of Jane's clumsy feet.
I don't think anyone would have noticed. It's all right. You did show me one of the tools you used for doing stuff.
My long loppers.
And I really liked it.
Yeah,
my long
loppers.
Short, so I can see how that would be quite useful.
It's a very good tool, but using it all day, because obviously your arms are above your head, made my shoulders very sore on Monday.
What was the thing you said that I thought was an alien language?
I offered to lend you my spin time rake so you could scarify your lawn.
That was it. It's all nonsense speak. It's brilliant.
All real words.
It's like James's script tonight. It was written by Lewis Carroll.
He was. We're through the looking glass, people.
Yes, we are through the looking glass.
Thing is, I can't edit the pop out now because I referred to it, and I've referred to it again. I've left myself in quite a quandary.
It'd be like one of those things they have on an IMDb thing for a film where they say... goofs and glitches and stuff, and where people like in Blade Runner, where they all refer to a character who was cut out of it earlier on, and it's all confusing.
When do you ever edit this, though?
Oh, you wouldn't believe how much time goes into making the magic happen, Richard.
He makes us all sound taller for a start. Do you not notice that?
Yeah, because on this you stand at least 5'6".
I do, and actually, I'm a midget.
3 foot,
functionally a midget.
I think you'll find that you have to call yourself a little person.
I think I get to call myself whatever I choose to. No, you're right. If Jane can be sexist about ladies, then I have to be careful. I'm a little person.
Anyway, this weekend I had two curries.
I
had two curries and I went gardening.
And you done the garden.
Yeah.
And your dogs ate all of your stuff. I saw
The dogs had eaten some stuff when we came in today, but that's
normal.
Still in the week, though.
That's par for the course.
Mm.
Okay, we've got spinning orders this week, haven't we?
Oh, God, you put me first.
I have. And as we've whittled on for 15 minutes already, we should probably talk about our books, what we got.
I read some other books that other people are going to talk about, so I will be informed when they're talking about them. I might talk about that as well.
Can I ask you guys before you start, right? Now it's really light outside while we're doing this. Does this feel a little bit like when you're a kid and you had to go to bed? And it was still light outside, and it didn't quite feel right.
It doesn't quite feel
right doing this in the light.
Because I'm not going to bed.
I feel kind of a little bit like a kid in bed with things not feeling quite right every time we record this.
Fair enough. Sorry, go on.
Right, okay, so New Mutants, number 12. We'll talk a tiny little bit about it. I know I talk about it every week. I'm still enjoying New Mutants. It's written by Zeb Wells, and this issue, there has kind of been an issue with the fact that there's a different artist almost all the time on it. This issue was penciled and inked by Ibrahim Robeson, and it's a gorgeous looking comic. Unfortunately, for the second time in about 2 or 3 months, the third time in 2 or 3 months, this is part of a crossover story. Mm. And although it keeps in character and it doesn't necessarily... I know that about the last issue, which was a crossover with The Siege, I said it was a really good one-off issue. This one is right in the middle of the Second Coming thing that's going through the X-Men books at the moment. There's actually a map in the back of it, a list of all of the comics you'll need to read until July.
Oh, Jesus.
With all of the stuff going on, and it's... There's some great moments in it. There's some really, really nice art in it. And a really nice dynamic going on between the team. They're using their powers in a way that's quite interesting and stuff. But it's still a story in the middle of a crossover, and as such, it's a little bit of a pain in the arse. When you consider that the Marvel ethos, the thing they've been talking about a lot, is that there aren't going to be any crossovers after The Siege. Well, this one's still going to be going come the end of July. So good issue. I am enjoying the New Mutants, but I think three different crossovers over the course of a few months is a little bit silly. I read S.H.I.E.L.D. I know that was out last week, but we didn't have comics last week.
I read S.H.I.E.L.D.
And you guys really, really... The internet really, really liked it, from what I can gather. You guys really, really liked it.
Well, this is on the internet, but I loved it.
Didn't love it. I really liked it. I thought it was gorgeous. TARDIS, in the background, yeah, that's cool.
Nice little visual gags all the way through it.
I think, because I did read it quite quickly, as James did mention to me earlier on, so it's possible that I'm missing quite a lot. But to me, it's told in a very non-linear way, and it jumps in and out of 2 or 3 different stories down through time, which is all very interesting. I did keep up with what was going on. But at the same time, and again, this is maybe the graphic novel conundrum coming up again. It's possible that it'll all pan out over the length of the book. It didn't feel that seamless to me, the jumping in and out of the different stories. All it really made me feel like was, I think what I said was, it felt like I was watching a clip show on something like Stargate. I felt like I was more interested in the other stories than I was in the framing sequence, and I wasn't really getting to engage with any of them as much. So there are loads of ideas in there, and there's loads of, like, the writing is good. The writing is good, the art is beautiful, but I found the plotting kind of just... I just wanted to read the other stories already, you know?
I find it hard to disagree with you more.
I know you don't agree with me on this.
I absolutely loved it. I think you're right, it chopped and changed a little bit, and you have to stay with it, and I don't think it's necessarily a book that you can rush through quickly. No. It's so dense, so much going on, it's unreal. I just found it left me salivating and wanting more, to be honest with you.
Well, I just... because I read through... James is going to chuck Jane off the podcast.
I am. I think this is her second warning. I think one more audio boo-boo, and I think it's a red card.
I'm sorry, listener. It was an accident.
Right, so...
Freaking rebel.
I think that there's a problem with Marvel, well, with the mainstream publishers at the moment, in that they can't seem to balance between the super decompressed stories and the super decompressed comics where nothing happens, and the ones where they rush through all of the ideas and get it all done really, really, you know, they throw ideas across. What this book reminds me of a lot... in terms of content and in terms of this epic scale of it, is The Invisibles, which was a Grant Morrison book from a few years back that admittedly, you know, did struggle to keep an audience for ages. But basically any one scene in this book, I'd have been happy to see in its own comic. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I enjoyed it, but I'd have enjoyed it more with a bit more breathing room. I find that a lot with, I mean, is it a miniseries or...
I think it's an ongoing.
Yeah, I just felt like...
I found it a mouth-watering setup, to be honest with you. There's a lot happened, but it's a sort of breakneck introduction to the world that he... To be honest with you, Nick, and please don't take this the wrong way, but anyone who doesn't love a book where Galileo is about to confront Galactus is dead inside.
You see, I got a bit... I mean, that's the thing. I liked that...
Good.
Bit.
As long as you're getting inside it.
I like that bit. Mm. That's a big idea, and it's a great idea, and it's one panel.
But it may yet pay off.
Oh yeah, it may.
I mean, it's a setup. The hope is it'll pay off in issues to come.
I don't know. I just feel like last week had two really, from what I can gather, because I haven't read Turf yet either, but it had two books... that had really, really big ideas in them and were really, really super dense that we're waiting on to pay off rather than, and you know, it might do. It might do.
I think I can be quite impatient with my reading. If we're waiting for a book to completely pay off in issue one...
Oh, no, that isn't... No, we don't.
Am I taking you too literally?
Yes, you are taking me too literally. I mean, for all we know...
I'm literally taking you.
Galileo... The issue I've got with it is the framing sequence. The framing sequence isn't in it enough to really be its own story, but at the same time interjects on those brilliant ideas in a way that means we're not even entirely sure if we're going to get to find out that much more about the Galileo sequence. You know what I mean?
I suspect we will. I think maybe you've got a point. What would have been nice is for maybe a double first issue.
Yeah, maybe.
Because maybe you are right. Maybe Jonathan Hickman was telling an awful lot of story in the first issue, but the story he told, I found captivating, I found rich, I found dense. I just adored the art. The writing is bulletproof. I can't wait for the next issue.
Yeah, I mean, I can't, because, you know, I spent money on this one, and it'd be nice to see it go somewhere, wouldn't it? But no, it's good. Almost at the other end of the scale, I read Siege Loki, the Loki one shot that's part of the Siege crossover. Now, this is a book, admittedly, that only makes sense as part of the wider story of the Siege. It's written by Kieran Gillen, and drawn by Jamie McKelvey, who did a really nice backup story in Sword. But the previous work I'd seen by him that had been coloured by someone else at Marvel was actually quite, like, it made me quite unhappy. Have to be honest, I don't always get on that well with his art. I really, really liked I really, really liked the book he did by himself, whose name escapes me right now, but I didn't enjoy the first Phonogram book. So it's nice for me to see that in this book, coloured, I think, by someone else, coloured by Nathan Fairbairn, his art looked really nice. There aren't any dud panels, really. The story, Kieran Gillen's been really having fun with the Thor books, and Loki's kind of been in the background of all of the Siege stuff,
mm-hmm.
but it's been easy to think of the Siege books as kind of Brian Michael Bendis's
mm-hmm.
thing, really. Paying off a lot of storylines that he's been integral in. Everyone's coughing. Stop coughing.
I'm sorry, I've got a cold.
The Siege storyline pays off an awful lot of stuff that Brian Michael Bendis has been setting up through his books. But Kieran Gillen has kind of made the Asgard stuff his own in the Thor books and in the New Mutants one shot that I was talking about the other week. And the best thing about this book is it kind of places Loki at the centre of everything that's been happening through the Siege books, but not in a way that you need to necessarily read this book. You could read them fairly straight. There's some stuff with Norman Osborn, for example, that just makes perfect sense once you read this book, but you can live without knowing it, probably. I imagine you can live without knowing it. It's just really inventive and really good. And Kieran Gillen, I've said it before, I really like it when he's working on Marvel stuff, possibly more than I enjoyed the first book of Phonogram. I need to pick up the second Phonogram trade because a lot of people have said that it's ace. But I'm loving his stuff at Marvel. Cool. I've gone on about Sword every issue and I really, really like this.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not it's a good one shot, whether or not it's a good book for someone to pick up who isn't reading any of the Siege books, I don't know. But if you're reading Thor, it's definitely worth picking up. Yeah. And that's that. That's my books. I mean, I did pick up Daytrooper Demo and Turf, but I haven't read Turf yet, and other people are going to talk about Demo and Daytrooper, I think. So I don't know. That's me done. Feels like I went on for a really long time, but I don't know if I did.
You didn't.
Oh, James, you are such an arseface. Jane, what did you read?
I read Demo by Brian Wood and Becky Cloonan, mm-hmm. part 3 of 6, volume 1 love story.
It's great.
It is great. And I also bought Cold Space, written by Samuel Jackson and Eric Calderon, and art by Jeremy Rock.
Calderon.
Yeah, I'll start.
You liked Demo, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I liked Demo. There was a preview of this, as they do in each issue, in the second one, which turned my stomach slightly.
Oh.
Yeah, the second one did. And it really intrigued me then. It's about a girl who, she's got a couple of problems with anxiety and she's got mild obsessive compulsive disorder. So she finds reassurance by having post-it notes everywhere. Mm. And just even on the second page, she's just got hundreds of post-it notes all over her mirror, just telling her to brush her teeth for 2 minutes and to put eyeliner on second and eyeshadow on first and wash first and lip gloss rules and not such loads. The detail's amazing. Becky Cleanan's art is just amazing. It's brilliant. It
gets better and better.
It does get better and better. So she relies on these post-it notes throughout her day, you know, even ones that say don't forget to breathe and things, which made me giggle. And it's sort of her stability in her life. It helps her tick over and things. And but then she notices some post-it notes coming up that aren't hers. She has them all over town, everywhere, even on the bus stops, to tell her what bus she needs to get and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that somebody's seen these and is intrigued about it, and so starts leaving her notes, which sort of messes with her obsessive compulsiveness, and she ends up actually doing something quite drastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't spoil it, even though it did come out last week. But I know there's probably people still waiting.
A lot of people will be reading it. Yeah,
yeah, this week. But it had a really, really nice ending, and it was Volume 1 of Love Story.
Or so, Volume 1 Love Story was the title. I think that's probably still all we'll see of that story.
Yes, exactly.
Brian would like those sorts of... They're like mixtapes. They're like mixtape names, aren't they?
It's called that because I think it's written in the style of the stories from the Volume 1 of Demo.
Oh,
if you ever look in the back matter, he talks about
that. Unfortunately, I don't have time to read.
No.
The story is brilliant. Each one, I love these one shots, and they're getting stronger and stronger. And the stories are really good, and I'm really looking forward to see what happens with the rest of the run. But Becky Cloonan's art is just
it's gorgeous.
She's just turned me for black and white comics. So
there's one of the post-its actually. One of the post-its she writes herself. that one, breathe out and accept it. I think was just. Love. Did you read the book, James?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Was a particularly cute one. I had a moment where I went...
There's lots of swear.
Well, I thought it was... excuse me.
James is just dying.
What I thought was remarkable is Brian Wood, the writings, he uses his words sparingly, but you really buy into our world, don't you? You actually
exactly.
care about it, and you need to by the end. For the end of the story to pay off, you need to care about it. And it's remarkable how much he manages to pack in to a 22-page comic.
You're completely right. There's just some panels where it's just literally her and the post-it notes, but it tells so much more about her and where the story could go than with the panels with the text in as well. So I really liked these. Are sort of the quite down-to-earth. You can almost, well, apart from the second one, I'm sure there's people out there that might relate to that. But
I think, what would you call them? Slice of life.
Yes, they are slice of life.
Quite literally the second one.
It's a slice of life.
The weird thing about the first book is the first couple, it's adapted. The first series was adapted from stuff he'd done from Mutant Book, for Marvel, I think, that didn't come off. And so they kind of almost have powers. The people in it almost have powers in that one, in the first two or three. But then they kind of settle into this sort of model where they're almost not... Sometimes weird things happen in them, but generally they could easily just be sort of... Like, there was the woman who had the dream that she couldn't shake.
Yeah, and Space Angels.
That's kind of a...
Are they related to space whales?
Yeah.
That's
they made space whales.
Kind of a almost supernatural story, but at the same time, it could just be a bit weird. It's almost lit.
This one's the most down-to-earth one.
Yeah. So they're all very playing on your subconscious, a lot of them. As well, it's just sort of what's going on in the background.
Yeah, absolutely. But they're dense, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's Becky Cloonan's art as well. It's so rich, isn't it? There's so much going on. That
compliments the story beautifully.
It's almost like they're like comic book people who know how to tell stories
through
the medium of comic books.
It's amazing.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. Cold Space, a very extreme comic to... Demo. I don't know if any of you guys did you get a chance to read
no,
it? Richard
I didn't
no,
read
no,
it, no.
Picks up. It is a.
Is it cold space all one word or is it cold?
Cold
space.
Space.
Okay, that's how I've written it. So that's good.
Look at you doing your admin.
Probably won't get the chance to.
It's sort of written and created by Samuel Jackson, so I think that was the thing that sort of attracted me to it. It's a sort of sci-fi western type story, which isn't my usual. Thing.
It isn't anyone's. No, that's not true, actually, because Firefly was kind of a sci-fi western, and that's good.
No, that's very different to this.
Oh, right, okay.
It's really strange. I don't know if I can say this, but I'm going to say it. It's written how I thought Samuel Jackson would write something like that about himself. The character, it seems like it's based on him almost.
Yeah, but that's quite often the case when you get these celebrity books.
And it's just like when you sort of based on his films and things like that, the sort of roles he's taken and the quick one-liners and the sort of attitude seems to have been poured onto this character. It's not bad at all. It's just not my sort of thing. But there's a very busty, gorgeous lady in there as well who gets a few complimentary panels in it.
There's actually just a total boob shot.
Yes,
there.
Yeah.
It's worth noting from looking at it that it says there's an artist, Jeremy Rock.
Yeah.
And it says, written and created by Samuel Jackson and Eric Calderon. Now, what that tells me
yeah.
is that Samuel L. Jackson thought it would be a cool idea yeah.
and Eric Calderon yeah, wrote it. That's what I was trying to
say. Have you heard of a cartoon called Afro Samurai?
No.
They did that together.
Samuel Jackson and...
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe they do do kind of have a writing partnership.
Yeah, so I think... I don't know whether Samuel Jackson wrote Afro Samurai. I know he did the voice, but they've obviously got a friendship and decided to... to do the comic together.
The story was... It's quite fast-paced, and I found it a little bit... I had to sort of look back and try and figure out what character goes where and how they sort of relate together. But you sort of jump in halfway through where you've got the main character... I can't remember what his name is. I don't think they even mention it until later on. Oh, it's... if you look at the back panel, James, the very last panel.
Mulberry.
Yes, his name's Mulberry. He seems a bit like a rogue character and he's escaping some officials and they catch up with him and he sort of defeats them. And but as he's defeating them, one of them has left a grenade on his ship, so he's trying to get his ship away from this... part of the ship away from this grenade, where this grenade's going to be going off, and he jumps, but he doesn't know where he's going, and he ends up crash-landing on this moon. And the story
sort of... So it's a bit like Skids.
Yes, a bit. Like, in that concept, it's like Skids.
Everything crashing and...
Yeah.
It's almost going to be like a fish out of water, sort of.
Yes, it seems like that. He crash-lands on this moon, and it's a bit Mad Max, Western Mad Max, the moon he lands on, and there's a group of sort of people salvage the wreckage and find out that he's still alive, but he's not quite human. So the sort of sparks talks amongst the little community they've got there, and then don't want to spoil it, but that's when it's sort of left on a bit of a cliffhanger, and where. I don't really know where the story will go. Well,
I'm not really sure from how you described it where it's been.
Exactly. That's just it. If
you don't know where it's been, I'd put it down there.
It sort of jumps halfway in, so you don't. There's obviously a lot there to. It seemed like a really big taster to get your teeth into the character a bit more. Because you want to try and entice you to find out what's happened to him, why he's a bit rogue, and what's happened in the past and things. And you don't quite trust him.
Are there any snakes at all?
No. Snakes on a space plane.
Yeah.
I'm reading, he says, oh, we in the ghetto now? That's one line, I'll let that go. But he actually says, oh, hell no.
Yeah, he says nuts a lot as well. Oh, nuts.
Is it kind of what you would have expected from, I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but from a celebrity vanity project, do you think?
You'd have thought I'd have learned maybe from previous...
Which previous
comics.
Vanity projects did you read?
Oh, what was the celebrity? Who was it? It was Jennifer Love Hewitt's...
Music Box.
Yeah, that looked really quite poor.
I don't remember that. Oh, vaguely, I might have blocked it out.
Compared to that, this was much better. It isn't really my thing. I don't know if I'll pick it up, but I think it was worth a mention just because obviously Samuel Jackson intrigued me slightly, so...
It looks interesting.
I haven't even spoken about the art. The art's very good. I really liked the artwork through it. It's very pretty. There's lots of colours.
The spaceship looks a little bit like the spaceship.
I don't think you've done yourself justice there, Jane.
The spaceship looks a little bit like the spaceship in Firefly. A little bit. It's all chunky at the front.
Or Red Dwarf.
Or Red Dwarf. Mm. Yeah, or Red Dwarf.
It did remind me a bit of Starbug.
Or Hyperdrive.
Yeah, it did remind me of Starbug.
Hyperdrive.
In fact, the story reminded me a little bit of Red Dwarf, but... Yeah.
Good Red Dwarf or shit Red Dwarf?
I mean, first series Red Dwarf or everything after the first series Red Dwarf?
When I thought Red Dwarf was still good.
Okay.
So it could be anyway.
That was a good answer. You should be a politician.
Yes, and that's me done.
There was an issue of Dingo. What's the most recent issue of Dingo you've got?
I missed one. I need to get three. I'm annoyed.
Did you pick up four?
I bought four and then thought it was three and got really annoyed.
That's a good job, because I almost picked up four for you, so I'm glad I didn't.
No, I've got four. I'll probably have to pick that up on Dream.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us, though, Jane.
You're welcome.
That's great.
I hope you enjoyed it.
So, Jane's Adventures in Comic Book.
So, Richard, what did you get today?
Today at the comic shop, I bought some comics.
Do it in your voice.
Revolutionary.
Do it in your voice.
No.
What's your voice?
I don't know.
Is this my voice?
Now I'm confused.
In your special, what's your special voice?
In my special come no.
Special come no.
Special come no.
Do you like the way we sit here respectfully listening to their review, and then they it gets to us,
and it just all goes wrong.
Why are you talking? What?
No, you've trampled all over my reviews in the past.
She's right. The chair just made a funny noise under me. That wasn't me.
There's no evidence that I've trampled on over
really?
In the past.
There's no evidence. Audio evidence. Not recorded, yeah. And maybe on the internet for everyone to listen to.
Well, not forever, but
not everyone
for all the time that I continue paying the Libsyn subscription.
I didn't say forever. I said for everyone.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Yeah, wash your ears out.
So, cheers for that, Richard.
That's all right. Yeah, it's a good week.
Yeah.
So you bought some comics.
So what'd you get, Rich?
So which one?
I've got Punisher Max number 6, which I think you're going to talk about, James, aren't you?
I will. Okay.
I thought there was too much toilet humour in that, personally, but we'll discuss.
You've become so prudish, so prudish this week.
The Flash, which I'm actually going to talk about.
Good.
First issue, which is Geoff Johns and Francis Manapul. Now,
Flash.
The Flash. Now, I don't really read many DC comics. I think I prefer Marvel. So I was aware that this was a title to try and get people to read the Flash comics.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't read Darkest Night. I got kind of the gist of it. But I think the whole Darkest Night, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of that was to bring a lot of characters back in the limelight.
And certainly the Flash seems one to of them. The way it's worked out, yeah.
So the Flash is obviously one of the main characters they want to bring back and make popular again. So
he's been dead the longest, I think, this version, hasn't
yeah.
he?
So
he died during Crisis, didn't he?
Yeah, it's 86.
Mm. So for someone that doesn't... Obviously, I know that he can run really fast.
yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Kind of gives it away. And that's why I've never really been that interested, because I just thought it was a bit lame. I mean, Billy Whiz has been doing that for years.
He can run like Quicksilver.
Oh, really?
Yeah, quite literally.
but I have to say, I really, really enjoyed it. The story is him going back to New York, where he's a forensic scientist
Central City,
yeah, for the police force.
Is it New York or something?
No, it's Central City.
It's Central
New York,
City.
Maybe the city, yeah, sorry, yeah. Central City. So, yeah, it's him going back to where he works, I presume. Used to work for the police force.
He did.
As a forensic person.
As a forensic TV person.
Idiot. But he was scared of blood, and he killed serial killers. No, hang on.
Yeah, right.
No. He didn't do that. He was just a forensic geezer.
He made that up in your head.
I think it was Dexter.
Oh,
I was
yeah,
getting him confused
yeah.
with.
Yeah.
And he isn't any of the people off CSI either.
No, which would probably be a little bit better.
Well, no, I don't know. I mean, it might be good.
Anyway, so the story sees him go back to his old job. Nice little opening scene with him chasing some robbers in a car, which is kind of cool. And then he goes back to his job, and some dude turns up. And I had to ask you guys who it was. And who did we say it was?
Mirror Man.
No?
Mirror Master.
Mirror Master. Sorry.
Mirror Master.
Yeah.
Somebody like that. And I'm assuming this is stuff to do with Blackest Night. Like I say, because I don't really read many DC comics. So he investigates what's happening with this dude turning up out of nowhere. And I won't spoil the end because other stuff happens. For a Flash kind of novice, it was fun. I imagine people that like the Flash would probably love this because the art's stunning and it's Geoff Johns. Apparently he's been planning this for a while to bring him back into kind of mainstream the DC universe, and I know it's been getting a lot of praise. For me, it was the art more than anything. It's lovely, lovely art, really, really well drawn, really nice comic, very kinetic, because it has to be, I guess, because the gag is he runs really fast.
The gag about yeah. Batman is
he's a bit moody.
That is the gag.
But as a character, at the moment, I don't know whether there's enough there to make me come back. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the comic. I just found as a character, so the dude can run fast.
No. Do you know what I found and what I liked about it? Because last week there was a primer out which told the tale of... It just had a little bit of backstory about Barry Allen, what motivated him to become the forensic scientist, and introduced you to both the Rogues Gallery from the Flash universe and the rest of the characters... You know, the older Flash and the younger Flash, Wally, and so on. what I really took from that is it's, in inverted commas, a proper comic book.
Mm.
It's not a book that feels like it's being aimed at a middle-aged audience. It's which a lot of books, I don't think are unfair saying they are.
No, I think you're right.
It's a book that I actually feel like I could give... And we talk about our nephews, getting them into comic books. It's a book like I could feel I could plonk that into the hands of my nephew.
Yeah.
And it's a character for him to start getting his teeth into.
Yeah.
Which is so many books aren't. It's, you know, it's Geoff Johns, so it's a solid going to be a solid reboot.
Yeah.
Isn't it? And it's accessible.
Like you said after already, you said, you know, he's a safe pair of hands, and he absolutely is.
Yeah.
You know, for me, doesn't really know an awful lot about the character. It was enough. Everything I needed to know, I can pretty much know where the story's going to go. You were saying earlier on about S.H.I.E.L.D. that there was kind of too much, too many story threads thrown out that you want to know more about. Yeah. This is a perfect, straightforward kind of story, really. And that's why I enjoyed it. But what I'm saying for me, it's just the character I'm not overly excited about.
You know,
because I don't, you know, say what you can.
Because he runs really fast. And, you know what worries me about that book, and watching you read it kind of didn't help me with this, was I was reading the preview bump on it, where it was all going on about how it, you know, he's back. Is it Barry Allen? Is it that one?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, Barry Allen. What, Wally West is
he's the back. One. He's the, you know, he's back and he's after the events of Blackest Night. And so it's he's in his own all new book. It's a new number one. But one of the Rogues Gallery, this is actually what it said in the preview thing, but the first thing he has to face when he's not even back 5 minutes before he has to deal with one of the Rogues Gallery turning up dead, and what's, because that's what they're called, isn't it?
Mm.
The Flash's Rogues Gallery is called the Rogues Gallery. but one of his oldest enemies turns up dead. And I thought, so you've got a number one issue, you're bringing back this character, you've got a number one issue which might pull in new readers, and your first story is about his old villains, and it just felt like you've got this opportunity to grab in new people and not be mired down by all that continuity for at least a few issues. And yet we were watching, and you said that there was a primer, so maybe that helped.
The primer was very good as well, actually.
But we were sitting with Richard, and Richard's a smart chap, and he knows the deal with comics. He knows about continuity. He knows that most things will be explained, and yet he's still like, there are people thrown into the story who... I think that's a bit unfair, James.
I don't know what you mean.
you're reading the story, you're not daft, and yet you're having these characters who are thrown in, and you're obviously supposed to... Presumably the way it's written, you get the impression, because you ask... You're obviously supposed to know who that person is.
It told you later on. We're talking about the dude we're talking about, and you're absolutely right. I kind of, it's a point well made. It's a jumping on point. I kind of looked at him and said to you, didn't I? Who's this dude? I don't know who he is. They do tell you later on.
I'm going to say, it's not unfair to not know who someone is on one page, but a few pages later you find out.
Oh, no, not necessarily.
No, it's not that.
It's not that unfair.
I guess what Nick's trying to say is, for a first issue, why can't he just, you know, foil, you know, some kind of crime? Why does it have to be something within the universe? Why can't it just be, some nutter doing something crazy that's not ever been written before?
As devil's advocate, though, I mean, if they're rebooting it, I mean, they're going to keep the Rogues Gallery, aren't they? I mean, there's an established cast of characters. Issue? Because they're reintroducing you to his world, aren't they? So maybe you need to be reintroduced to his Rogues Gallery, Jane. Well,
is that the comic you got the ring for?
It is, yes, the stylish ring that I am wearing.
So... You liked the ring.
I love the ring, I'm going to keep it on forever and ever. It's very nice. Anyway,
We could argue about The Flash for hours.
James and I just aren't going to agree on anything this week.
I just really liked the ring. I thought it was cool that he got a ring.
It's a lovely ring. I didn't get one. I bought The Flash as well.
There's a preview for Zatanna, and that looks really good.
Do you think?
I don't know.
I also picked up Cold Space because I was intrigued.
Have you read it yet?
No.
Oh.
Daredevil 506. It's been a couple of months since the last issue. I hope it doesn't make me yawn. It needs to start picking up. But I am looking forward to reading it, and the cover on that is beautiful.
A nice cover, isn't it?
What did we call Day Tripper? We said he was Vertigo's very own Kenny.
Yeah, you bastards.
So, was going to read that, but I couldn't help myself.
Oh, you
I read Chew number 10, which is the end of the International Flavour arc, which basically, I think I spoke about the last issue, and I'll probably always talk about Chew because I love it. The deal is with this arc is there's lots of chefs have been kidnapped and taken to a secret island where they're cooking for some dudes and some other people. This arc does this issue does a good job of kind of wrapping things up. Really, you see Tony Chew actually goes to the island and rescues one of the chefs. Also, remember further back from another issue, there was a woman who could write her reviews of her food, and when you read it, it felt like you were eating it.
Oh yeah.
And obviously because of Tony, everything he eats, he can he knows where it's come from. He not only fancies it will be a great relationship deal for them because he can only eat beetroot, so obviously he can feel like he's eating food if she was to write for him all the time. So a little bit of romance going on there.
That's really nice. Sweet.
Yeah, it's beautiful,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's very cute.
And also remember from the last issue, we saw this kind of shadowy figure which turned out to be a kind of black ops vampire. We find out a little bit more about him, that basically he eats people, so he can learn more about them. Which is
didn't Chew do that in the early issue?
Yeah, kind of. There was another chef in the other issue as well that basically in his food, if he ate it, it was it films or works of writers? I can't remember what it was now. But when the chef in the last issue, when he cooked, people felt like they'd eaten like Hamlet or Romeo and Juliet.
I can't remember.
I can't remember now.
They're really working this power set, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
It's quite cool.
And so it wraps things up really, really nicely yet again. Chew, he's my favourite comic without a doubt. I absolutely love it. I love the universe they're creating. They're not afraid to throw their ideas out there. Some lovely little touches in the back as well, where there's been some sort of. I think they're taking a break for a month basically because Rob Guillory, who draws and colours it, is obviously quite a lot to do on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
So towards the end, you've got Tony Chew back in the office, and there's some little. Little signs in the back, and if you look, it says Guillory committed to mental facility because I believe he was a bit under pressure to get these out on time. But I don't mind if it's late for a couple of months because of the quality of it.
Good reason to take hiatus as long as they plan it.
It's yeah, good, exactly. So consistently been my favourite comic. So I just had to talk about it because it's wonderful.
Where was the secret island you mentioned?
It was in the Pacific, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm going to do when we eventually sell this to Rupert Murdoch with my earnings.
I was hoping to sell this to Viacom.
Oh, well then, I don't mind. Whoever gives us the most money, I was going to buy myself an island.
Were you?
Yeah. And I was going to populate it with mannequins who I will treat as my subjects.
Oh.
That's really creepy.
That's
yeah, it might be.
No, it would be.
I think we learned something about Nick today.
James, what did you read this week?
There's no way I'm going to make this through without coughing all over this, is it? I can tell now.
Does anyone remember the one where I couldn't? I almost died midway through a podcast. You'll probably be fine.
I could forget. I too bought Daredevil, The Man Without Fear.
You could forget.
I bought Adventure Comics number 10.
Okay.
Which I still haven't dropped. To be honest with it, and I was really
don't you keep talking about dropping it?
Yeah, I do, and I should probably do it just because it's just all over the shop. Part 12, the very good Unwritten. I also bought Chew, I also bought Day Tripper, and also bought The Flash.
What are you going to talk about, James?
None of those.
Can I just say, because we're not going to mention it, Unwritten is shaping up to be the most heartbreaking fucking read every month.
Unwritten or Day Tripper?
Unwritten.
I mean, Unwritten's very good as well, but yeah, Day Tripper
is brilliant, but it's just heartbreaking. Anyway, that's all I would have said if I could read it anyway.
Okay, that's good. The first book I'm going to talk about is Jason Aaron's Punisher Max. It's the... We're now looking at Bullseye. It looks like...
Issue?
It's issue number 6. Looks like we're going to take a trip round Frank's Rogues Gallery as well, to be honest with you. Obviously with the Kingpin previously.
Is he still a Frankenstein's monster?
Not in this one. This is the adult version of the Punisher story, not the mainstream Marvel Frankencastle Punisher.
There's something happening to that, though. Is that changing names or something? Is that going
on? Yeah, it's going to be known as Podmax. No one ever used the name.
Frankencastle or something.
But it's subtitled Frankencastle.
And they're going to call it actually Frankencastle.
I don't know. Why you put me on the spot like this?
Because you read all the websites. I don't read.
I don't read all the websites. You put me under unbearable pressure.
Rich, do you read all the websites? Have you heard anything about that?
I kind of zoned out then. I wasn't really listening. What did you say?
Frankencastle. Is it going to be changed to? Is it going to be called Frankencastle soon?
That's the name of the arc.
Oh, I thought there was some big changes happening with the name.
They've laid down some foundations. You can kind of see how he's going to be back to being normal Frank. Some of the stuff that's happening. So they'll drag it out for a little bit and then it'll just be Frank.
Oh, okay.
Frank. All right, Frank.
But in this one, he's already Frank.
This one's a completely different world.
Excellent.
The adult world.
And that's what I thought of that. it features Bullseye and we get reintroduced essentially to the Bullseye character who he's a hitman. So I don't think you have to be a genius to work out what he's going to be doing in this issue.
Is he recognisably the same character, though, or does he still have powers and stuff? Because this has been quite grounded, hasn't it?
It has. I mean, certainly, we said before, Aaron's Punisher is different from Ennis's in so much as Ennis completely took Frank outside, or essentially took him outside the Marvel Universe, really grounded him in the real world, whereas Aaron is taking characters from the Marvel Universe and it appears to be a slightly more gritty, more, in inverted commas, real world.
Mm.
However, it's not. No, he doesn't appear to have powers, apart from the fact that he's a very successful hitman who's able to hide small guns up his anus.
Anyone can hide, so that's not a power.
I don't know. Being able to hide a small gun in your anus and still get through a full cavity search.
No, that'd be hard.
That's almost a special power, isn't it?
Mm. That is quite impressive. Don't think I could do that.
This doesn't quite at present hit the heights that I think the last arc did with the Kingpin. That was highly enjoyable. Richard was rather disgusted by the toilet humour, of which there is much in this.
It wasn't so much disgusted. I just thought
stomach belt.
I'm quite hungry. I just felt it was. Toilet humour really is anyone can kind of write that, can't they? You know, fart jokes and that kind of stuff. And you see it a lot in Deadpool comics, and I kind of let it slide because it's Deadpool. But even so, that gets a bit tiring. But for it to turn up in a Punisher comic, because Aaron's a really good writer.
Yeah, especially this Punisher.
But there's
like 3-4 toilet gags.
He's kind of who Bullseye is, though. He's an irreverent arsehole, isn't he? And I think maybe it was just highlighting that's the sort of character is. In the part you're talking about, he's in an impossible situation, surrounded by hoodlums who should be able to take him out. And, you know, he's relaxed enough to be farting and making jokes about it. So.
And he made a spear out of his own frozen feces.
That
sounds a bit more like Garth Ennis, Welcome Back, the Steve Dillon and Garth Ennis series than the Kingpin stuff you've been talking about. Mm. It does seem a bit OTT, but I mean, you know,
I enjoyed it. It's just I find when it reverts to that, you just think, oh, come on, you can write better than that. You don't need to, resort to toilet humour. The action was good.
Jess, it can be racist too.
Scalped isn't racist.
Okay.
It's racy.
It's racy, but it's not racist. And we get to see a little bit of psychoanalyst babble with Frank and one of his old war buddies who comes to patch him up. We'll see how the arc plays out. Like I say, at present it's not quite as exciting as I found the first few issues of Aaron's run. He is a solid writer, I'm sure it'll play out just fine, and if it doesn't, I just won't talk about it. Second book I'm going to talk about is a book I always mention I've picked up, and I never seem to talk about Batman for some reason.
What number is it?
It's 698,
Oh, that's been going a while. I bet there's a lot of history behind it.
Really?
What's he called?
Batman. He's a man who essentially dresses in a costume of a bat. He uses it as a tool to mentally disarm hoodlums and villainous vigilantes.
Does he have bat powers?
Yeah.
He doesn't have bat powers, no. No echolocation or anything like that.
But the gentleman on the cover there seems to be wearing a green hat.
With a question mark on it. Mm.
St. Patrick's Day. I know what this is. That's St. Patrick's Day.
You massive tool.
What?
That's Edward Nygma, who's a private eye in Gotham, the city where Batman's based. He was previously known as the villain called the Riddler. Although this cover could lead you to believe, as would reading Gotham City Sirens, that Edward Nygma may be about to revert at some point.
Does he have scarring on his face?
No, that's blood.
Is that just blood? Oh, that's okay then.
And is that the man they call Bat in the reflection in his glasses?
That is, yeah. It's a Tony Daniel cover, which is lovely.
It is a nice cover.
And yeah, it kind of telegraphs, I think, although nothing concludes with the Riddler in this issue, kind of telegraphs where the character of the Riddler's going. As I say, start of a new arc, Riddle Me This, Black Magic Tricks.
Oh, there's Amy Pond.
Yeah, there's Amy Pond, thank you. It start off by Dick is still having trouble with the toxin. Still having trouble with the toxins. He was infected within the last arc with the black mask, or was it the black cat? I get this.
Dick was infected.
Dick was infected. Oh, yeah, because Dick, that could mean penis, couldn't it? I see. Dick's penis was infected and he's having bad dreams.
When did this
essentially, there's been a series of murders committed in the style of the Batman's Rogues Gallery, but obviously none of them are committed by the characters that they're intended to look like. So the first one is Zaz.
Copycats.
Copycat killings, essentially. Ooh. Yeah, absolutely. Each time, though, at the crime scene, it seems that Eddie has beaten them to it. And frankly, during this, the Riddler is showing Batman up. I suspect, given the cover, given the story, it kind of feels possibly like the story is being telegraphed. I hope it isn't and it twists, but hey, it's Batman and it's a detective story.
It's quite nice to see the Riddler not being, because he's been a villain for such a long time. Yeah. It's nice to, one of my favourite Batman stories is a Riddler story, though. So.
But it's also like nice to see him standing up on his own 2 feet, you're right, being a proper character, rather than, quite often, even if he's not being villainous, he's just, he can be like Catwoman's goofy sidekick, kind of, you know? So he has become, in both this and Paul Dini's, if you stop moving about, the futon wouldn't You can. Me and Richard can sit perfectly still through.
We'll never know, because you're not on the creaky chair.
But Tony Daniel and Paul Dini have been making the Riddler quite an interesting multi-layer character, I think, through the two books they've been doing. So, it's an enjoyable start to a new arc with a frightening conclusion.
Ooh. Does the Batman have the proportionate speed and strength of a bat?
No, he does not. Batman has no powers to speak of. He's just a masked vigilante. He's just a man with man's powers. But he has the courage of 10
bats. So what you're saying is he's got the proportionate speed and strength of a man.
No, he's got the proportionate speed and strength of a very, very well-trained man.
Like Magic Johnson.
Or Bruce Wayne.
Or Marty McFly.
Or
Jimmy Savile.
Yeah. He's like 10 Linford Christies combined with 20 Brian Jacks.
But that's a power. That's a power. If he's got the strength of 10 men...
Look, he's not a fucking metahuman, all right?
He isn't metahuman.
No. If that's where we're going...
But he is superpowered. No. He sounds rubbish. Why are they making comics about him?
Well, he's been quite successful in the past. I'm sure he'll continue to be so, Nicholas. You obnoxious child.
I normally sit in another chair. This has all gone weird.
Right, that's it. I'm taking the podcast away. Okay, that's my reviews. Done.
Thank you.
They were lovely.
Yeah, we liked them.
I am One thing I did this week that I didn't mention is I watched Misfits. Did you guys watch Misfits?
No.
So has anyone else got anything they want to talk about at all?
What's Misfits?
On comics. It's a series that was on Channel 4 about a bunch of kids on their community service in a meteor, and there's a meteor storm. It's English. It's British. So they're in a there's like a weird meteor storm, and they run high from it, but they're exposed to something, and they all develop powers. And it's actually really, and I was expecting it to be a bit naff, which is why I put off watching it for such a long time. But I watched it.
Is it just one episode?
No, it's six episodes, and it's just really interesting. It's another thing like Smallville, where like because the meteor storm happened in the town, all of the stories are connected to somebody else getting weird powers that they have to deal with. But they're really nice, like human. Interesting stories. It's finished now.
Right, okay.
But I'm sure it's easy enough to get hold of.
It's on 4 on Demand, so...
Yeah, that's where I saw it.
Yeah, or you could find a BitTorrent site and download it.
Why would you do that? That's awful.
Well, I don't know if they... If
that's
so
illegal.
Yeah.
Warren Ellis suggested today...
Wellis.
...that if he was starting afresh as a new writer who nobody really knew about, he would think that a good strategy would be to wrap up his comic in a CBZ, a .cbz format and anonymously stick it on like a file sharing site, because he said that obscurity is, I can't remember the exact quote, but the obscurity is basically the worst thing. That like people not know, as a writer or an artist, people not knowing your name is like the worst possible thing, and that seems like a really good way, people sharing it. And it made me think that if I had books out on sale somewhere, if I was a professional creator of some kind, I don't know which would bother me more, that people were downloading my stuff illegally, or if I found out that nobody was downloading my stuff illegally.
That's a good point.
But anyway, so...
I think it's likely to be one of those.
Yeah. Was there any news this week, James?
Known choice.
Yes. That's right. Can I pick that one? Can I open the box? Can I find the banker? Can I eat Noel Edmonds?
I accidentally saw some weird... Was there a Alice in Wonderland thing recently?
That was an Easter, yeah.
I accidentally caught a Deal or No Deal.
I accidentally caught
Easter special where they were all dressed up in Alice in Wonderland outfits.
I can't watch it because it makes me just too aware of my own mortality.
I've never seen it.
Don't.
You really haven't? No, oh, I've don't. Seen
it. It'll give you the screaming abducts. No.
Although, it is interesting because it is one of the few opportunities you get to see a grown man have a conversation with his inner demons. Nobody thinks anything of it. He picks up the phone and pretends to be talking to someone who is essentially just him in his own head. And nobody acts like it's weird or anything.
So Deal or No Deal is essentially Noel Edmonds having an existential crisis.
He's basically Two-Face, only without like the good side.
Yeah, that's true. Two-Face, that sounds familiar, but I don't... How can you be dissing Batman one minute and then referencing his rogues gallery the next?
Oh, it's Two-Face Batman.
You're so fucking inconsistent.
No, he's not.
Just assume he's a really cool character that Tommy Lee Jones played once.
I thought he was from the Archers. Yeah, and there was some stuff about Marvel selling...
What's that about?
Oh, they're selling books to bookshops through someone other than Diamond, and apparently that's interesting.
Do they sell books through Diamond to bookshops? Oh, I thought
anymore.
I thought Diamond sold stuff to comic shops.
Well, they just do it now. Hmm. Apparently they did it at the bookshops as well, and apparently this was revolutionary news that should excite us during the week.
Oh, I didn't... That's ridiculous.
But I just really wanted to mention it on the podcast so people could hear how, frankly, nonplussed I am by it. And now I've done that, and that was quite cathartic. So thank you for letting me do that.
That's okay.
That's good.
Okay.
What next, peoples?
Tintin.
Spotlight. Oh, I love these. How many have we done so far?
This is the third one.
The third
one. Third Tintin Spotlight that I've done.
So settle round, make yourself comfortable. Let's listen to James.
Actually, I'll tell you what, Jane, if you're going to the toilet, which I believe you are, would you mind getting me another drink, please? Because I've got a very tickly throat.
I really thought you were going to say, could you perhaps fill this up for me, which really amused me in my head.
Okay, I chose King Ottokar's Scepter for a couple of reasons. The first is it introduces us to a country that remains significant, in a fictional country, mm-hmm. which remains significant throughout the Tintin books. This is quite an early one. The second is it's interesting to me because this is one of the books that one of the collaborators was Edgar P. Jacobs, who, like Hergé, was a Tintin cartoon illustrator and writer. And he's better known for being the creator and writer of the Blake and Mortimer stories, which are similar to Tintin in their tone. They're very much, for want of a better phrase, boys' own adventures. But they tend to be a lot more dense, feel more heavily researched in Tintin books. There's frankly more to them. They're slightly less... It's hard to say this without sounding disparaging about Tintin books. They're slightly less childish than Tintin books. But they're an excellent read, and obviously they're currently being translated for the UK and America, for the English-speaking market, by the excellent Cinebook.
You like them, you've mentioned them before.
I absolutely love them, just because they're making European books more accessible than they've been at any point during my lifetime. As I said, all I really had access to was maybe Lucky Luke, Asterix and Tintin when I was a kid. Anyway, so this is quite an early Tintin book. I think it would have been completed, I'll have a look in the front here, 1947 the artwork was copyrighted, so it's a few years old now.
And what it's at least 5 years old.
It is more than 5 years old, definitely. What I love about this is how quickly we're into the story. Mm-hmm. It's literally in the first panel, Tintin goes for a walk with Snowy, and immediately you find someone's briefcase and has to take it back to them, and thus our adventure begins.
This stuff just happens to him all the time, doesn't he? He's like Jessica Fletcher.
He is like Jessica Fletcher.
You were saying earlier on about ginger people. So,
is Tintin?
Tintin's ginger.
Is he? I've always thought of Tintin as a strawberry blonde.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Looks ginger to me.
So, he is ginger. I didn't really mean what I said about gingers. That was just a bit of a sort of comic conceit.
Right, okay. Because then you wouldn't be being very nice about Tintin.
No, that's, and I love Tintin very much. Oh, that's not Coca-Cola. James brought me water.
Go back and bring him back something that he wants.
Jane brought me water and I clearly asked for Coca-Cola. That really is really squeaky today, isn't it?
It's falling down.
Okay, well, thank you for breaking my...
I didn't break it.
...futon.
Sorry, James.
That's okay. Okay, so he takes the briefcase back to a professor who is an expert in silligraphy, which is the study of heraldic items such as seals and so forth. And it turns out that the professor has been invited to go and study the treasures of the King of Sildavia.
I've heard of Sildavia. Is that the country you're talking about?
It is. It's the made-up country I'm talking about. And obviously Sildavia becomes significant. Everything seems to happen. It almost seems to be Hergé's sort of composite Eastern European country.
It's a bit like Lost.
Thank you very much, Jane.
There's a plan.
It's nothing like Lost, in so much as Tintin isn't shit.
Where is Sylvania?
What are you doing?
Careful when you sit down. Where is Sylvania?
Sildavia, I would say, is to the... southeast of Poland, I would say. I've always imagined, but I've never seen it on a map. Anyway, several mysterious incidents occur. Tintin decides that, as the intrigue increases, that he's going to take a job that's on offer with the professor and accompany him to Sildavia. Although, by the time he meets him, he's become a more suspicious character. Anyway, he goes to Sildavia, and there's a lovely piece in the middle of the book, actually, where Tintin's reading a tourist brochure, essentially, about Sildavia. And it's,
Do they often do that in Tintin books? No, that sort of change in format?
They don't, no. It's essentially, it's all text, obviously illustrated with some descriptive pictures, but it is just two pages of text.
It's quite a postmodern...
It is. I mean, for such an old book, I think you're quite right. It's a postmodern technique he's using. So, you know, it's, I was going to say it's very well researched, very well thought out. It makes Sildavia feel like a very real place. He's very much thought about the history of this kingdom. Significant to the Sildavians, though, is the scepter of King Ottokar. Sildavian mythology dictates that once a year, the king of Sildavia must appear in public with his scepter. Otherwise, he must abdicate the throne. Now, it doesn't take a genius to work out that what's going to happen is the scepter's going to go missing and Tintin has to find out who's done it. However, there are various attempts to stop Tintin getting there in the first place. My favourite being, he's riding in a small plane to go to Clow, the capital of Sildavia, with the professor, whereas the pilot pulls a lever and a false bottom falls out of the plane. Out of the plane.
That's forward planning, isn't it? Do all planes have those?
They don't, but they knew Tintin was coming. Snowy. Yeah, Snowy falls as well. Luckily, there is a parachute attached to the back of the chair. Tintin pulls it, lets go of it like a ginger idiot. Luckily, Snowy lands in the parachute. Fortunately for Tintin, who is now free of the parachute, free falling, there's a massive wagon of hay.
Presumably
the parachute broke his fall a bit.
It would have decelerated him a little bit. Otherwise, he would have gone straight through the hay, through the wagon, and broken every bone in his body and just been a bloody mess on the floor.
The plane.
The end.
The plane was... I mean, you'll have to help me with this, because I'm a bit confused. The plane has a false bottom.
Yeah.
They've got an engineer in or whatever. They've planned that.
They've put in a false bottom. And a lever.
The chairs have parachutes on them.
That's right, yeah.
So they planned forward and got the false bottom, got it all levered up, but they left the parachutes on the backs of the chairs.
Well, they're Eastern European villains from the late 40s, Nick. They're not as sophisticated as villains of today from Western Europe.
Okay. So they're a bit stupid.
Details, mate. You know what I mean? They can't help it. You know, they're under a lot of pressure.
They needed a manager.
They've got a scepter to fucking steal. They ain't got time to be worrying about bloody parachutes and ginger boy reporters.
The villains need to sort out their management structure in there. Couple of supervisors in place to take the.
And one thing's for certain, I'm sure heads will roll.
They bloody should.
They have more performance reviews. Yeah. You know, to point out where they're going wrong and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I've just noticed why we've sort of broken your flow a little bit there. Awful lot of facial hair going on with the characters in this issue.
Well, they're Eastern European. That's how Hergé, he was very fond of beards.
Yeah.
But Hergé would often give the Eastern European characters quite pronounced moustaches and beards, just so you knew where they came from.
The thing about the Tintin reviews, as opposed to most of our other spotlights, except the ones done by John, is that James has actually done his research. He's done his background reading, and it actually says in, I can't remember which it was, but quite a respected text about Hergé, he was very fond of beards. He's not just making that up. There was a whole chapter about it.
Well, I think one thing that I'm not even going to start going there because I'm aware of how litigious his estate is. And I know it's deeply unlikely they're ever listening to this, but I'm not going, that's a road I'm not going to walk down. To be honest with you, you get sued even if you're telling the truth about Hergé. Start making stuff up. I'll go to prison and never come out. And it'll probably be a Bordovian prison where, frankly, the regime is pretty harsh. And interestingly enough, Nick, it's the Bordovian government that are planning to overthrow the king of Sildavia in this story. And the plot to steal the scepter is one hatched by them.
We are genuinely flabbergasted. Yeah. Totally me and Richard, but he managed to pull that back.
Yeah, I totally did.
That's brilliant.
Well done.
Thank you. So Tintin, essentially, on his way to Clow to warn the king of the conspiracy against him, is captured, escapes. Captured once again, escapes, captured, and then eventually escapes to find...
never give up.
No, yeah. Never give up. No.
That, never surrender.
I think that's the key message I think we can take from all Tintin books. It's never give up, never surrender. Richie's just pointing out some lovely comic relief provided by Snowy, who breaks into a Sildavian dinosaur museum and steals a Diplodocus's leg bone.
Never give up, never surrender, and no dog left behind.
That's right.
That's what you learn from Tintin books.
That's correct. So, eventually, the scepter is, as you would expect,
found?
Stolen.
Stolen.
And then found after. Found. And everyone goes home and gets a football. And it's everyone's very happy.
Are we making you hate Tintin?
Yeah, a little bit.
God. I'm sorry, I really love... It's not your futon collapsed underneath me. I didn't do it on purpose.
There is some... Just to point out, I mean, look, it's not, even by Tintin standards, in terms of the story, it's not the most dense of stories. It rattles along at a real breakneck...
Yeah, it sounds cool.
A real breakneck pace. It's lovely. But there are some lovely... Yeah, there's some lovely set pieces, some lovely panels in there. I'll just, as Richard's pointed out, towards the end, Tintin finds himself in a Bordovian fighter plane, which looks not dissimilar to the Spitfire, which I suppose it's possible by that point. We're in the post-war period in Europe, so it is possible that the Bordovian government had bought some Spitfires from the English government, probably stolen them, probably, because they're distrustful. You can't trust the Bordovians. But the panels are beautiful. These are panels, I suspect, looking at style of art, that would have been done by Edgar P. Jacobs. It looks very much like his sort of... He had a real eye for detail, technical detail, which is absolutely gorgeous. Comic relief, obviously, is provided in this book by the Thompsons and by Snowy, of which there's a fair amount, but actually it is a cracking adventure romp. You know, a lot happens. I said glibly, didn't I, that Tintin's captured escape. But it all works. It rattles along at a nice pace, and you're constantly rooting for him, and especially at the end pursuit is thoroughly enjoyable. What's very nice, obviously, Tintin. Hope I'm not spoiling this book too much by saying that Tintin celebrated for regaining the sceptre at the end, although as the art was copyrighted in 1947, you've had plenty of time to read it by now.
Yeah, you wankers.
What I find really delightful, and I think this is because it's the English translation, I suspect other translations they'd have been going to a different destination, but they board a seaplane, which is its final destination is Southampton.
Oh.
Yay.
Which is where what we are.
It is. Was the next book...
Oh, there's whiskey.
Goes on Titanic. No, it wasn't that long ago, was it?
No, the next instalment is he develops a drug habit and ends up living in Millbrook.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, which is very nice.
Does it say at the end of Tintin books, Tintin will return in... the Millbrook drug habit, or whatever the next book's going to be. Because I love that bit in James Bond films.
I tell you what's really beautiful. I was talking about the Blake and Mortimer, which, despite what Jane might tell you, is not a euphemism for masturbation. You've accused me of, I think, on the pod as well.
Not on the pod.
I like the fact that Blake and Mortimer often ends with a rousing "God Save the Queen," which is quite nice because they've solved the crime. They're all together, they're drinking brandy in their gentleman's club, and they all toast the Queen at the end of it.
It's a bit like when Stan Lee talks. After every sentence he finishes, he says, Excelsior!
Kind of like that, yeah.
I love this bit here. It's really cool. I like... People who really know what they're doing with comics, they really use the page so that, you know, they have a reveal at the beginning of a two-page spread because they know you'll be able to see it if it's on the end of... And at the end of this one, it's like the penultimate page. There's two panels where the Thompsons just start freaking out because they think the plane's going to crash. And it's like, well, this is a bit late in the day for there to be intrigue. I wonder what happens on the next page. It's a flying boat. It's all right. Tintin just corrects them. Yeah. And it's like really interesting.
And it's great, isn't it? Because the humour obviously it's innocent. You know, it is from a different age. I mean, it's
literally. It's cute.
But the stories still hold up. You know, they stand on their own two feet. It's still an enjoyable read. That one in particular. It's a long time since I've read King Ottokar's Scepter. It's another one that I've had to actually buy to refresh my collection because I lost it along the way. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. It's one of those ones where sometimes I tend to put a couple of days aside to read a Tintin book, because some of them can be a little bit dense and you can't always necessarily, and the Blake Immortal, you can't necessarily get through them in a single sitting just because there's so much text to get through. But that is, it's a rollicking good read, and I think that's an appropriate word to use.
I still get a really nice feeling whenever I see the back and all of the covers. I don't, Tintin...
It's exciting, you feel like you want to tick them off, don't you?
Yeah. Tintin reporter for Le Petit Vingtieme in the Land of the Soviets. Have we talked about that before?
We haven't. I haven't read that. But at the time that I was reading the Tintin books, which would have been late 80s, early 90s, when most of my collection was bought, Land of the Soviets, Tintin and the Congo, and Tintin and the Alpha Art were yet to be released. Tintin and the Alpha Art is an unfinished Hergé story. Land of the Soviets is a very, very early one.
Looks really early.
And Tintin in the Congo, frankly, is a little bit offensively racist.
I imagine, like, some of the... I mean, Tintin in America, I can't really remember it, but there's a Native American... And if this was in the 40s or whenever, there is a Native American about to help him.
There are some characters in there that are clearly Jewish as well.
All right. But the... I'm looking at this, and there's he basically. You forget that Tintin himself is, even though he's a kid, is quite hard. He beats up four people.
In that one, actually, is one of those stories where he looks particularly childlike as well. He's so much smaller than the adults as well. It's, I always imagine in my mind that Tintin's in his early 20s, but there he looks like he's in his mid-teens, doesn't he?
Him
and he is a boy reporter, you know?
I think when we read them, we would have been younger than him, though, so maybe he would have looked better. But, him and Snowy punch out four guys who are knife and sword wielding six panels.
Yeah, and he's not a metahuman either. I mean, he's just a double hard ginger Belgian child.
Kicks ass.
He does.
Brian Michael Bendis would make four issues out of that fight.
Oh my god, if every Tintin book was a current mainstream Marvel or DC book, it would run to at least 100 issues.
I have to be honest though, I'd quite like to let these scenes breathe a little across the whole book, maybe. I'm just kidding.
You're just trying to antagonise me, aren't you? I can tell. King Otakar Scepter, I think, is actually a good. You can read them whatever order you like, but it's a good early book to read.
You can't read them in whatever order you like because I've read the last page, and you mean the books, don't you?
I mean the books rather than that individual issue. You silly Wally.
I am. I'm a stupid twat.
Yes, so would you like to choose the next one that we'll talk about?
Well, off the bat,
with a mushroom on it.
I want Tintin, you to do the shooting star. Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about the shooting star. Obviously, we've spoken about it before, this is a pre-Captain Haddock, he's not met him yet. I think he'd have probably met the Thompsons quite recently, so this is very much the one of the early stories when it's just Tintin and Snowy, really.
Good stuff, mate.
Yeah.
Good comic book stuff. Thank you.
Take that back.
Thank you, Nicholas.
Sterling man. And I'm really sorry, I really like your Tintin review spotlights, but the futon really did collapse under me.
No, that's fine. I'm going to pretend it's fine now and then probably cry myself to sleep.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think I might cry myself to sleep.
You should.
I should.
Yeah.
And I did not tell you that it was collapsing on purpose.
Yes. I told you to sit down and then it just sunk down.
I did not tell her to sit down. Okay. Maybe... signalled for you to sit down.
Would you like to remind people about our competition and the way that you'll be able to splice out later and post on your Tumblr page and we can put on the Monkey on My Back
You mean as I've said I'd do for the last 2 weeks and haven't got around to? Yeah.
Just do the admin, Nick.
Okay, I'll do the admin. I'm trying to organise a wedding and everything as well. It's not easy.
You're not the first person in the world to get married, Nick.
We reviewed a few weeks back, we reviewed a wonderful little anthology book called Songbird Birdsong, which Richard has just picked up so that it's in front of me so that I can remember what it's called. But I just did for the first time in weeks. By Fellbite Press. They are UK based small press creators, and this book is lovely. We loved it. We all read it and spotlighted it when it was it. And it's got a bunch of really nice stories in. And recently I was lucky enough to meet all but one of them. And they did some sketches, signed the book and did some sketches. So all but one of the Fellbite Press creators have signed and done a drawing in the front of this book. We figured rather than us keeping our greasy mitts on it, I'm the only one with greasy mitts, the others, they have very clean hands. Rather than us keeping hold of it, what we would like is to give it to one of our listener. And the way you could get this book, which I'm holding in a very dramatic way, is by sending us something that we can use to promote the podcast and the website. It can be anything. It can be our preferred, our thing of choice is probably maybe a drawing of a monkey or something along those lines. If you can do pictures, do a picture. If you can do something else, yeah, do something else.
Anything that you're inspired by when you listen to us.
Yeah. Mm. Paint a monkey on your face.
Yes. Take a picture. Yeah, that's a good
one. Oh, you could take a picture of yourself doing something monkey-like.
Yeah. Maybe you could mutilate a monkey in a way of getting some sort of revenge on us for taking up so much of your precious time.
Are we making the criteria for this competition too abstract?
Possibly. And I really hope no one does mutilate a monkey.
Your random shit.
Yeah. Or just send us stuff. Yeah. Send us stuff you don't care about. Don't send us shit. Especially not random ones.
Vintage copies of Club magazine would be really... Club great. International, that would be really well received.
Which one's Club? Is that the...
They're always a little bit classier, weren't they?
Oh, but with lady nudie ladies in... James just did an impersonation of a porno lady.
I didn't know what it was as well.
Yeah, so basically, send us stuff. Any stuff. It's possibly better for you if it is stuff that you perceive as being of a lower value than the prize you may potentially win, because otherwise that's just a waste of time for you.
Which and we'll have goodies in as well.
I'm forever... I'll probably be shaving soon, so we can stick some of the beard in.
Nice. We've got Justice League.
That's right, Cry for Freedom.
Oh, yeah.
Richard's got From Hell on his shelf. He's never going to read that.
Has been colored in, though. Or will be.
Is that not borrowed?
He's forgotten.
All right, okay.
I'll almost undoubtedly buy a couple of trades that I've already got over the next couple of months as well.
Excellent. So there we have it. I think that's a more concise description of the competition than we've given so far.
Send us monkey stuff or just stuff.
Yeah, we're talking about the closing date being in April, but we might extend that depending on the response.
Although we've been inundated with responses far, so thank you to all of you imaginary people that have sent us entries so far.
Does anyone listen to the end anyway?
Does anyone listen to it full stop? This could potentially be extended to this time next year, couldn't it?
Yeah, easily. Easily if we don't get anything decent.
So can I enter the competition?
Yeah, can I enter the competition?
That's how I met you guys.
Yeah.
I entered a competition on the website.
And what did you win, Nick?
I won a preacher graphic novel. It was great.
Well, there you go, look. And that could be you, lucky listener.
And the friendship of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh. And the friendship of a lifetime.
And who knows what happens if we meet you, listener. We could end up doing a video cast, maybe a touring play. Who knows?
The possibilities are endless. With Monkey on My Back.
So send your entries to monkeyonmyback@gmx.com.
That's monkeyonmyback@gmx.com.
Where the comics live!
No, they don't.
Wow.
That's where our email lives.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's it. What are you guys doing this week? Jane, you first.
I'm moving.
You actually are moving.
I actually am moving. It's very stressful, that's why I was trying to find Superman to help me move, but he won't.
Wish he fucking would.
I know.
Save me a job, innit?
Do you need any more help?
Say yes.
Or will more people?
Thank you, Nick. I have lots of people. I have a plan. I have a moving plan. I've been really sensible about this. Nick, James looks like he wants you to help him.
If we give away the address of the house that she's moving to, won't that mean she has to move somewhere else because we've got stalkers listening?
18 Roustabout Avenue.
Where the roustabouts are.
So I'll be doing that with my weekend.
James wants me to help. You don't want me to help.
I'm a bit confused. Who helps me? I'm just scared about lots of people helping me.
I'm not in charge of the helping, so fuck it.
I made a list, so, you know.
She's checked
days,
it twice.
Yeah, I have. People on certain days at different times will be coming to help me move.
She's not happy with breaking my futon. You're leaving your Magnus label.
I'm
going to
pick no, because look, I finished
no,
the bottle.
No, you're not. You're going to leave this crap in here like you do every friggin' week. And
I don't do that every week. That's a really mean thing to say. You know how I feel about that sort of thing.
Okay.
So I'm going to be doing something really quite ordinary this weekend, but normal service.
That's not ordinary. It's a great adventure. You're moving into a new house and taking on a new stage of your life.
Thank you, Nick.
You should be proud of yourself. Thank you. You put all the zombie killing and the spaceship abductions and the werewolf
masturbating and just stuff. Say bullshit.
You put all that behind you and you're moving on.
Who's that putting it behind me? I said it was on hold this weekend.
Well, then I'm very disappointed in you. I'm looking forward to... Are we finished with that?
Yes,
sorry.
We've finished.
I'm looking forward to my fiancé coming back because, aww, frankly, it might not be apparent from this podcast, but I get a bit sleep-deprived when she's not here. That doesn't mean I'm a big lame-o who can't sleep because my loved one... I just don't sleep enough.
It's because you get scared when she's not
here. I get scared.
It's just you can't stop masturbating.
I actually literally can't stop masturbating. Chat roulette. And not on chat roulette. I wouldn't be
that
one of those.
That was you.
I wouldn't be one of those men with his men with his penis out. I only watch them.
You were the man with the massive.
I don't really.
Nuts.
That's entirely a lie. You've managed not to mention that almost the whole podcast. That's incredible.
What was that?
I'll be parading around with my massive nuts.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm going to be doing. Well, thank you, Jane. You cleared up all the gum.
How about you, Rich?
It's my niece's birthday tomorrow, Lily, and she is 5.
Aww.
So, birthday party fun tomorrow, and then another poker night Saturday with the boys.
Well, if you listen to this, Lily, happy birthday! And sorry for all the foul language.
Oh, Lily, send us a monkey picture. You might win a prize.
I'll get them to draw some tomorrow night.
Yes,
well, if they do, they're almost undoubtedly going to win.
Yeah.
But the... Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
You're doing lots of family stuff recently. It's very cute.
What about James?
I'm helping a friend move, and I'll be continuing to garden.
With the... You'll be flanging the Maltarol.
Well, I did the laurel bushes last weekend. I'll be doing the Leylandii this week.
Be trimming his
bush. Yes, I'll be trimming my bushes. I've got a reasonably sized garden. It's got bushes either side. Which stops my neighbours seeing me cavorting around the garden naked.
Which he does every full moon.
With gay abandon.
He does. Abandon is a superhero.
That's why my upstairs neighbours, who used to feature very slightly in Thuds, moved out.
I liked... Are they still up there?
No, they've gone. I'm very sad they've gone. I like them very much.
I only met the female upstairs neighbour... last week, and she was quite lovely. I liked her.
Yes, she was very cute.
She was a delight. I'm very disappointed they've moved out, but never mind. But if you'd like to rent a two-bedroom flat for £650 per calendar month
in Southampton,
in central Southampton, then be sure to let me know at monkeyonmyback@gmx.com.
It's only 5 minutes from the train station. Town.
No, 10 minute walk from the train station. 15 minutes from town, Nick. Come on.
Oh, okay.
Get it right.
I was trying to sell a room.
But I mean, for a two-bedroomed flat, in this location, £650 per calendar month is very reasonable.
Short taxi ride from the hospital.
It is, which would be essential when you make lots of noise and I break into your flat and break your legs.
Yes, he does. Mm. That's why the others are leaving, actually.
Yeah.
Are we done? Are we out?
Are we
done?
So that just leaves us for a rainbow bye-byes.
How does that go? What does that... Because I read that and I had to stop myself laughing because I didn't want to disrupt...
Cheerio!
See ya!
See you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
See you. We'd love to be you.
Bye.